More than any other Westerner, Ram Dass has been able to bridge the gap between East and West. In his lectures and seminars, and in books like Grist for the Mill, Journey of Awakening, and Miracle of Love, he has been able to speak the age-old spiritual wisdom of the East in language that Americans can understand. But Ram Dass is more than an author and a lecturer. He has dedicated himself to living the spiritual life, to walking the spiritual path, and so by example, showing the way to all of us. This program is part of a four-cassette series recorded live during a two-day workshop at Windstar in Snowmass, Colorado.
The I Ching, the master said, life leads the thoughtful man on a path of many windings. Now the course is checked, now it runs straight again. Here winged thoughts may pour freely forth in words, but there the heavy burden of knowledge must be shut away in silence. But when two people are at one in their inmost hearts, they shatter even the strength of iron or of bronze. And when two people understand each other in their inmost hearts, their words are sweet and strong, like the fragrance of orchids. A man is in a rowboat, and he's rowing in the fog, and he bumps into another boat, and he starts to scream profanities at the boatman in the other boat until he notices there is no boatman. That's the essence of the issue of relationship. That's the whole lecture. Yeah. All the rest is footnote. We each are in a complex web of relationships, each in some way providing something that we experience ourselves as not being. This relationship gives us something towards our completeness. And most times we are so identified with our separateness, which feels less than whole. We experience our need, and you say, I need intimacy, I need companionship, I need security from somebody, I need. And you go in with a cup to be filled. The problem with that as a form of relationship that arises again and again is that the need has with it a model in your mind of what it is that will fulfill that need. But what we have in the universe is what is. And what we are constantly trying to do is cram what is into our model of what it is we want it to be. So you are constantly trying to manipulate other people to live out your fantasies, to fulfill your model of what you think you need. And the frustration and the anger is often because other people just are who they are, not who you think they ought to be from your need point of view. And as long as you're identified with your need, that's all you can see is whether people fulfill your fantasy. The minute you are connected with that part of you which has no need, then the reason for relationship changes. You come together with people because there is some dance to do. There is some business at hand. Not so much out of needfulness, but more out of delight or play or joy. If you can see, just see the two into one. We talked about where you come and you're busy being separate, needful, separate, I need. I feel inadequate, I feel insecure, I feel frightened, I feel lonely, I feel self-pity, I feel, etc. I need. And then you, through a relationship or in some way you awaken into the oneness that you just are. And that, sure, there are all these needs and all that stuff, but you still just are. And behind all the needs, you are. And R doesn't need anything. It just is. I is. I is. And then resting in that place, you see that in your full isness, you are in form. And so you come to fulfill the form as one being in two, meaning as the one, as God at play. And then it's called lila or dance. So you can see that relationships come at different levels of this. Relationship can be two separate entities relating out of needfulness, psychological symbiosis, complementarity, coming together to fulfill each other's needs. Relationship can also be the dance of the one playing as two. Now, you can see relationships, a special relationship, like with a partner, in three ways. One is as a support system, having nothing to do with your spiritual work particularly. It's merely something that you, well, now I've got that taken care of. Now I can do my meditation. Right? I've got a partner and I've got my marriage taken care of, my family. That's all settled. Now I can go to work. That's one way of looking at relationships. The next way of seeing relationship is as yoga, meaning as a vehicle for the two coming into the one. That is, you come together with somebody in order to transcend. Now it's a yogic method. It's a tantric method, meaning a method of using the senses and the mind to go beyond the senses and the mind. And then the third form of way a relationship works is where you are resting in the one, and then you are in a relationship as the play of the one as two. And then it's dance or play or delight. And they're not mutually exclusive, but these are three different ways in which people do use relationships in relation to spiritual work. When you are separate and you are needful, that, and you're identified with your need, you are looking for something like, as I may have said, that image of the baby duck, when the silhouette of the mother duck goes before its field and a certain thing goes and it opens its mouth to get fed. It's an instinctual response. It's a pattern that awakens a certain response. And in a way, although we are not instinctual at that completely involuntary level, there is a very heavy instinctual overlay. It's sort of a psychological set of instincts or patterns that are called key releasing mechanisms that just release responses. And if you are feeling that you are less than whole, you are looking for that which will give you completeness. And often when you meet that person, a person who represents that, at least in your projections, whether they do or not remains to be seen, but in your projections, what happens is it releases in you a door like my guru released in me. It's a release that allows you to come into a place in your being and leads you to say, I am in love. Now, what has happened is that other person has been your connection. You can't get to the place any other way but through them. And so when you meet them, you say, I am in love. And because you confuse the method with the state, you say, I am in love with you, which really you're saying, you are my connection to the place in me where I am love, is another way of saying that thing, although it's a little grosser way of saying it, a little less romantic, of course. Now, romantic love is the love that comes out of needfulness, and it's the love of where you connect and you experience being in love through the other person. And what happens immediately is, the minute you are dependent on anything or form in order for you to feel the completeness, because the word love, the state of conscious love, is the same as consciousness or awareness. It's the flow. It's being part of the universe. It's being one with it all. It's a feeling of release, of totality. And when you experience that feeling, and the reason you experience it is through a form, you become very possessive of that form. and you want to know where that form will be next Thursday night, you want to have that form. You want to take that whole form home and lock it in some way. It's just like any junkie with a connection. You want to make sure your connection is there all the time when you need it. And you don't want your connection going off and being for somebody else. And there is a lot of anxiety in romantic love, and that's part of what makes it so exciting and so horrible, the horrible beauty of romantic love. Because you are dealing with the inevitability, even when it's at its highest moment, that it's going to change. Because as long as it involves forms in the universe, forms change. Minds change, so people fall in and out. Their needs change, so what fulfilled a need one moment doesn't fulfill it later. Not only that, but people die, people go away, people fall in love with someone else. I mean, it's all up for grabs, so there's a lot of fear in that kind of love. And that's the stuff that feeds romantic poetry, that attraction and fear all mixed together as part of the horrible beauty of human romantic love. As you awaken, as you begin to be aware that you aren't who you think you are, as you begin to allow yourself to rest in a place in your being that isn't needful, that isn't frightened, that isn't lonely, just is. At first it'll just be like, feel like awareness. Later it starts to have feelings of bliss and rapture, and you start to feel this extraordinary feeling like you are in love. Except you're not in love with anybody particular, you're just in love. Now it's interesting because you have been working. You grew up because your whole personality is based on a deprivation model. See, you developed the personality in a sense as a model of I am not enough. I am a part of. I am needful. I am separate. And so most of your patterns of response are connected with that model that you have. Personality is usually built that's why Freud always dealt from negative to zero, never positive, just because that's really what we're dealing with most of the time. If you start to experience that feeling and you look at somebody, you will feel that feeling of love, and you're looking at somebody, and your old deprivation model leads you to want to collect that person. So what you say is, you want to build a nest together, in effect, one way or another. I mean, you go and get sticks and twigs and stuff. And you nest. And you are nesting, and then at some point you say, well, I'm going down to the store and get tofu and soy burgers or something. And you're at the checkout counter, and you look into the eyes of the person at the checkout person, and it happens again. See, because it's coming from in you. It's no longer dependent on somebody else doing it. It's there in you. And so you look, and there's your beloved again. And you're still in your deprivation model, you see, because the other one may not be in the nest when you get home, because you're still feeling somehow frightened you're going to lose it, that you need it. So you start, to the checkout person, have you considered a ménage à trois, you know? And then it gets more and more complicated all the time, as many of you have found out, that pretty soon you're like the Adamites and all these people who develop extended communes. But politically and economically, you finally have to give up your deprivation model because it's not functional anymore. Otherwise, you got to start with sunglasses or something with mirrors inside so you don't look at people anymore. You get to the point, especially as you start to rest in your soul more, where more and more you are seeing the beloved everywhere you look. And you're going to have to let go of the model that you got to collect it every time you see it. That's what has to go finally because we are so unprepared to be in love with everybody. See, that we feel we've got to do something about it every time it happens because it's so rare. Well, what happens if it isn't rare anymore? We aren't prepared for that kind of way of being in the universe. And it took a long time for me. First, what happened was when I started to see what was going to happen and I began to sense it, I would look at people and I would feel that thing happen, that love, that beloved. And I'd be very confused because I would be like halfway between models. I couldn't quite give up the old model. So I'd say, are you experiencing what I'm experiencing? And then I knew there was no more room at home. There are two things I'd like to read to you, because this gets very close to now what the spiritual work of devotional yoga is, about how you work with the beloved in the world, because this is a form of yoga. This is Kabir was a great bhakti, a great devotional yogi. And he said, since the day I met with my Lord, there has been no end to the sport of our love. I see with eyes open and smile, and behold his beauty everywhere. I utter his name, and whatever I see, it reminds me of him. Whatever I do, it becomes his worship. Wherever I go, I move around him. All I achieve is his service. When I lie down, I lie prostrate at his feet. Whether I rise or sit down, I can never forget him. For the rhythm of his music beats in my ears. And when you start to see the reflection of your own love everywhere in everybody you look, doesn't matter any longer what their mind is saying. They may be caught in their own mind, but you experience merely the beloved in another form. And what they experience when they can open, what you are then is an environment of unconditional love for them that they can open to if they're ready. So you just go around seeing the beloved all the time, and then they do whatever they need to do. As long as you think you need something from somebody, you can't open that way. Because your perception of another human being will always have a conditional quality, whether or not they're going to fulfill it. Like if you open your heart to somebody and they say, you disgust me, get away from me. I mean, can you get to the point where you can say, gee, it's too bad that you feel that way because I'm beautiful. I am what I am. If you can't love me, I'm sorry. Or does it, are you looking in their eyes to see if you're enough? If you're adequate, if you're lovable? See, as long as it comes from a needful state, you're constantly a conditional lover. And most relationships stay at the level of conditional love. I'll love you if you, and you love me if you. And then we're afraid of change. So we enter into conspiracies not to change. It's like, I'll make believe you are who you think you are. You'll make believe I am who I think I am. And you won't change, I won't change. And the whole thing turns into some kind of mechanical, you know, like plastic dance. It's horrible. And sometimes you see that, and it's really ghastly. You see two people, we're the Joneses. Like, I had a van, and I would live in, you know, parks, motor parks. The Smiths and the Browns and the Greens, you know, who, we're the Browns, you know, Sam, put out the garbage. And it's all, everything is, and you feel the frightening loneliness, the isolation into patterns, into locked into ritual. I think all of us would like to live in loving world. And you begin to see that you live in a world created by your own heart and mind. And that as long as you are identified with your separateness and your needfulness and your fear, there's no way. Because every message you're sending out is conditional love, and that creates in everybody around you fear. And they can only open so far. And this was a poem that was a very far out poem that Bhagwan Das turned me onto. It's called I Am the Great Sun, from a Norman crucifix of 1632 by somebody named Charles Cosley. And it's just where you're seeing love or where you won't see it. I am the great sun, but you do not see me. I am your husband, but you turn away. I am the captive, but you do not free me. I am the captain, you will not obey. I am the truth, but you will not believe me. I am the city, but you will not stay. I am your wife, your child, but you will leave me. I am that God to whom you will not pray. I am your counsel, but you do not hear me. I am the lover whom you will betray. I am the victor, but you do not cheer me. I am the holy dove whom you will slay. I am your life. But if you will not name me, seal up your soul with tears and never blame me. Mm-hmm. It's only when your love is here, you realize that you're not vulnerable, that you can love everybody. It's okay to love everybody. Even people that, whose actions you abhor. See, that's where the fire of purification comes. Because the judging mind turns off the heart again and again. You come into a judging mind, I can't love him, can't love her. He doesn't agree with the way I, he doesn't see the world the way I do. Years ago when I was driving across the country, which I do quite often, and I had a 1938 Buick limousine that I had made into a camper, and I was just cruising along the New York Thruway, and I got pinched for going too slow. And I was going 40 miles an hour, and I was sitting with one leg under me just driving along, and I was doing mantra. I was repeating the names of God. And this particular time, I was repeating Krishna's name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare. And I had been doing it for hours, and I was in such a state. I just kept enough down, I kept grounded enough to keep the steering wheel, and you know. So the state trooper stopped me, and he came up to get my license and registration. Well, in the state of consciousness I was in, who I saw coming through the window. What I saw was Krishna. I mean, what form would you expect God to come? He doesn't always come as a carpenter, you know. Why not a state trooper? So Krishna had come to give me darshan. What I learned from the drug days, that you don't say everything you see. So he asked for my license and registration, and I mean, I'm so happy to have the darshan of God that I'll play whatever form. You want me to be a culprit, I'll be a culprit. I don't care, you know, just once I hang out with you. So I hang, I'm looking at him with just total love. I mean, how would you look at your beloved? You know that feeling? And I hand him the license and registration, and he checks out the car and calls in and does his whole number. Says, what's in that box? And I say, it's mints, would you like one? I see the whole game, and he does too. And he finally, he runs through his routine. He tells me to drive on ancillary roads when I go so slow and all that. So now he's used up that routine, but he doesn't want to go away. State troopers are very rarely looked at with unconditional love. Says, great car you got here. Which then allows us to spit and kick the tires and talk about straight eights, and they don't make them like they used to, and do a whole macho routine together. I'll do anything, I don't care. You name the play, I'll play. It's okay with me, you know. So he runs out of that one. Now he's either got a cop to who he is, or that's it. We've run out of routines within these roles. So he says, all right, be gone with you, which is already a little suspicious, but we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. And state troopers don't usually say that, you know, be gone with you. So I start to drive away, and I look in my rearview mirror, and he's gone back to his police car, and he's waving at me. Okay, now you blew it. Now and it's interesting that when you start to live in this, now you can call it psychosis, and as a psychologist, that's what I would call me now. I mean, who I was then would have me hospitalized. But it's an extraordinary experience to start to open your, because this is the form of, this is the method of devotional or bhakti yoga, where you see that, after all forms are the forms of the formless. This is all God made manifest. This is all of it. If you just can get for a moment out of your needful state of deprivation, which is your mind, it's because you bought a model of yourself, and that model is coloring everything you see, so you constantly have to be using everything around you to fulfill something. The minute you can just rest in your isness, you can start to look out And you just see your lover in all these different forms. And these forms are and I mean, all the faces. I mean, when you're in love with somebody, you know the fun of making faces with each other and being flipping in and out of different roles together? And sometimes it gets scary, and you say, don't scare with me, come on back. I mean, you're too scary now, you know. Well, that's it, and you start to just look at all the different faces around you. And your heart doesn't close because you don't need anything. Your heart stays open. Perhaps the hardest thing is to be able to say no to people and keep your heart open in relationships. Mm-hmm. Like you take a child, when you have to say no, you have empathy as a human. You have a heart with empathy. And the empathy makes you experience that that person, when you say no to them, they feel pain. They're frustrated. So you feel a frustration. And then they're angry at you because you said no to something they wanted. And you don't want to feel anger from somebody you love. So because of the empathy with the frustration and the wanting, not wanting to feel anger, when you say no, you just slowly close your heart down to protect yourself. So you just pull away just a little bit. And that's what we've all learned. We've somehow learned that no means somehow a little coldness, a little withdrawal, a little bit of distance between people. And it's interesting that when you are resting in a part of your being where you're just listening to hear your dharma or the way to manifest, and you see in this condition no is appropriate, you say no without getting lost only in your human heart. You have those feelings, but you don't close down. That line from Kabir, do what you do with another human being, but never put them out of your heart. That's a really big one. I mean, if you want an essence teaching, that the word that my guru used more than any other word with most all these people that came to see him and offer themselves and all. I mean, when you think of gurus in the West, you think of people that say, sign here, join me, I'll take you through, you know, come to my ashram. The word that my guru used most frequently was jao. Jao means split, get lost, go away. Imagine that. I mean, you go across the ocean and you fall at his feet. He looks at you and he says, "Jiao, Jiao, I just got here. You know, don't you want me?" And all your paranoia, all your feeling of being unloved, unwanted, being rejected, all come into play. But after a while, you go and you come and he says, "Jiao," and you go and you come and he says, "Jiao," and he keeps throwing you out and throwing you out and throwing you out. Until you start to hear the word jiao, and you hear he's saying things like, go with love. It's okay, you can go on, you're loved. Go, the light is everywhere, what do you need to stay here for? You don't need me, go on with it. He's saying, I love you. And it's far out how the word, get lost, go, which would usually hurt you, comes to be the caress of love. That's an incredible teaching. Just to show you the flip of just a way in which you're reacting and closing your heart down instead of keeping your heart open.
Please turn the tape over to continue.